Jerusalem has often been in the news, hasn't it? Especially since 1948, when Israel became a nation once again. And quite recently, of course, it's been in the news because of the president choosing to move the embassy from Tel Aviv into Jerusalem. That's been met with opposition from various nations, various people who have opposed it, but it has brought Jerusalem into the news again, and people are and as you think about Jerusalem, well, it's a place where there's been about as much strife as anywhere. Can you imagine any city that's been fought over more than that one? Christians like to go there, mainly to see where Jesus walked, to be reminded of what Jesus has went through. And not just Jerusalem, but of course the whole land of Israel. But he was there, and so people go there wanting to be there, but and to learn about Jesus' time. Others go there in order that they might worship the way the Jews did. And that is something that I find baffling. Recently, I saw a picture of the vice president with a yarmulke on his head, standing in front of the Wailing Wall. And I've read of Christians who will go to that Wailing Wall and write down a prayer and stick it in the Wailing Wall somehow. Is that what we should be doing? What is Jerusalem all about? What are we to be thinking about Jerusalem? What was its place for God's people in the Old Testament? And is that its place for us today? What are we to be thinking about it? It's an important place, obviously. It was an important place in the history of God's people. So important that when the chronicler begins to tell of the ministry of David, the king whom God raised up after Saul, the first act he tells of in his chronicles is of David taking the city of Jerusalem. Think about that. That in itself tells you the importance to the chronicler of this city of Jerusalem. And so for our scripture lesson today, we're just going to read about David taking that through his general, Joab. And we find that in 1 Chronicles chapter 11. 1 Chronicles chapter 11. We're just going to read verses 4 through 9. Hear the word of the Lord. And David and all Israel went to Jerusalem, that is, Jebus, where the Jebusites were, the inhabitants of the land. The inhabitants of Jebus said to David, "You will not come in here." Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, that is, the city of David. David said, "Whoever strikes the Jebusites first shall be chief and commander." And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, went up first, so he became chief, and David lived in the stronghold. Therefore it was called the City of David. And he built the city all around, from the millo to in complete circuit. And Joab repaired the rest of the city, and David became greater and greater for the Lord of hosts was with him. We'll end our reading at that point and ask that God would indeed bless to us the ministry of his word as we consider it together. You can't help but recognize the importance of Jerusalem when you read the scriptures. And certainly that importance is given to us by the chronicler. He gives us a number of special notes about Jerusalem, about the temple that was built in Jerusalem and so forth. So the chronicler reflects the emphasis here. In the very first chapter of 1 Chronicles, the Jebusites are mentioned. Now, you remember who the Jebusites are? We read about it in this passage that we read. They were the inhabitants of Jebus, which became Jerusalem, was renamed Jerusalem. And so in chapter 1, verse 14, where we have a listing of a number of the tribes that were there in the land of Canaan, the Jebusites are right there in the forefront. Canaan was, of course, the grandson of Noah. And it was his descendants that lived in this land who turned away from the Lord, were unfaithful to him. And so God destroyed them and took that land from them and gave it to his people Israel. I remind you of the shorthand with which the chronicler writes, where he just mentions something to these people who know their Old Testaments, their Hebrew Bibles. They understand some of the things that are being referred to as David just mentions them, and so or as the chronicler mentions them. And so in chapter 3, where we have the descendants of David listed, why he makes the point that, for example, in verses 4 through 6, here were the children who were born to David in Hebron, where he reigned for 7 years and 6 months, and then he reigns 33 years in Jerusalem. And these were born to him in Jerusalem. The emphasis is on Jerusalem there. And again, in chapter 6, we find an emphasis among the priests, an emphasis in Jerusalem. In verse 10, we have a listing, we're in the middle of a listing of all the priests, you know, from father to son to grandson, on down the line. And he takes the time to stop when he comes to verse 10 and says, Johanan and father Azariah, to say it was he who served as priest in the house that Solomon built in Jerusalem. Now, you know, he doesn't stop to make comments like that very often. And he doesn't just stop to make the comment that it was in that temple that Solomon built, or the house that Solomon built, but it was the house that Solomon built in Jerusalem. So he's making that emphasis there. And again, in verse 15, Jehoshadak went into exile when the Lord sent Judah and Jerusalem into exile by the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. It's not just the nation, but then he announces the city, the capital city as well, that goes into exile. And later on, then in verse 32, they ministered, these are the ones who came back, they ministered with song before the tabernacle of the tent of meeting until Solomon built the house of the Lord in Jerusalem. And they performed their service according to their order. Now that may seem to be a small thing, but as you read it time after time after time, you realize he's putting an emphasis on Jerusalem. They didn't just serve before the house of the Lord or in the temple. But where was that temple? Well, it was in Jerusalem. And he wants us to understand that. When we come to the concluding genealogy in chapter 9, what do we read? Well, in verse 3, some of the people of Judah, Benjamin, Ephraim, Manasseh lived in Jerusalem. And then we go down to verses 34 and 38, where Jerusalem is again emphasized. These were the heads of fathers' houses of the Levites, according to their generations. Leaders, these lived in Jerusalem. And verse 38, Milcoth was the father of Shimeam, and these also lived opposite their kinsmen in Jerusalem with their kinsmen. It's not enough for him to say that they lived by each other, but to point out the city because of the importance of the city. And so using this kind of shorthand, the chronicler is reminding Israel, the Israelites, of the place Jerusalem. 1/6 of the mentions of just the name Jerusalem. You can do this in a quick check with your computer Bible. 1/6 of the time that Jerusalem is mentioned by that name is found in the books of Chronicles. And of course, we can add to that other titles that we've read earlier in here this morning, that it was the holy city, the city of David, Zion, as well as Jerusalem. Those are names that are all used for this place. And then Chronicles ends. 2 Chronicles, the last chapter. How does it end? Well, it's with Cyrus making an edict and saying, any one of you who wants to go up and build the house of the Lord, it's not just any one of you, but he is really directing those who love the Lord to go back to Jerusalem to rebuild it. In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah the prophet might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and also put it in writing. Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth and has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever is among you of all his people, may the Lord his God be with him. Let him go up. It's not just, well, if you feel like going up to build it, you can go ahead and build it. No, if you belong to him, go up and build it. It was a directive that was given to them. So the chronicler even ends his book with pointing them to Jerusalem. And so we are brought back to the first chapters of Chronicles, where these exiles have returned. And they're trying to understand. They're looking for hope, looking for encouragement so that they may continue with their work. Well, David had gone there, as we read, and made this Jebus into Jerusalem, the city of David, the holy city, the city of God. Why did he choose that place? We don't find any directive here that says God told David to make that his dwelling place. Although we find later on in other places after the fact that he chose Jerusalem to set his place there. Well, there were some things that David knew about the history of the land that helped him to understand this is the place. The first time we read about Jerusalem, we just have the abbreviated name of Salem. And we understand that to be the same place because Psalm 76:2 tells us that that's what it is. It just uses that abbreviated name to refer to the holy city. Now, what was taking place there? Well, that's where Melchizedek met Abraham after he had battled against these other kings and defeated them. And Melchizedek brought out wine and bread for Abraham and his people. Who was Melchizedek? The writer of Hebrews tells us, well, he's without father and without mother. That is, we don't have any genealogy for him. But many of us believe that this is a theophany, a presence of Christ, a physical manifestation of Christ in the world. Some are very adamant about that, and I tend to agree with them, that this is the Christ himself, who meets with David at Salem. He was the king of Salem. And he came out to refresh them. Then a little later in the book of Genesis, God comes to Abraham and says, now I know you're glad that you have the son finally, through whom will come the promise. Now I want you to sacrifice him. You can imagine how that must have hit Abraham. But he rose early the next morning and took Isaac with him, along with some others, and they headed off. And he saw the place at a distance called Mount Moriah. And he said to those who were with him, "You stay here while the boy and I go and worship, and we will come back to you." And I think many of you know that story of how Abraham placed his son on the altar and raised the knife to slay him. And God stopped him and said, now it's very clear that you trust me. Don't kill him. And so it's the writer of Hebrews that says it's as if he was raised from the dead. Where was it? Well, it was Mount Moriah. Well, if we come later into the life of David, there's a time in which he, in his pride, wants to have a census of the Israelites. And so he sends Joab out to count the people, to get a census. And finally, he comes to his senses and realizes that this is sin. It's arrogance on his part. Just a desire to know how many people there are. How great is this nation that he rules over? But God said, okay, but I still have to punish you. And I want you to decide what kind of punishment you want. And he gave them three options. And he said, let me fall into the hand of the Lord, for his mercies are great. And so the Lord brought a pestilence for 3 days. The angel of the Lord striking down people in the land of Israel. And the angel of the Lord came to Jerusalem, came to the place called Mount Moriah. And God told David to go out there and to prepare a sacrifice to stop the angel of the Lord from killing anymore. And he went to the place of a man by the name of Arana the Jebusite. You recognize that name, Jebusite? He was from the city of Jebus. He apparently was one of the leftovers from this city. One who had not been destroyed with it. And yet he was one who feared God. And he said, well, David, here, take these oxen and here's, you can take this threshing sledge and burn that. He said, no, I can't just take it. I have to pay for it. Because I can't offer to God something that doesn't cost me anything. That's what a sacrifice is. It costs us something. And where was that? That was Mount Moriah. And when we read of that event, I should have written down that passage, but when we read about that event, we read of how David intended then to have the temple built right at that site. And so he makes that. Here it is. In chapter 21 of 1 Chronicles. The Lord was merciful. And in verse 28 it says, at that time when David saw that the Lord had answered him at the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite, he sacrificed there for the tabernacle of the Lord which Moses had made in the wilderness, and the altar of burnt offering which were at that time in the high place at Gibeon. But David could not go before it to inquire of the Lord, for he was afraid of the sword of the angel of the Lord. Then David said, here shall be the house of the Lord God, and here the altar of burnt offering for Israel. Mount Moriah. Was it the same mountain that Abraham used? Some people believe it's a different Mount Moriah, but at least there is the connection of the name, even if it is a different location. David is pointing, is recognizing, though, that this land, this place, this location is Jerusalem. This is the city of David. It's the place of offering. And so he made it to be the holy city. There was the place of sacrifice. So we understand then why David would choose this place. It had already been important, as God had pointed it out to Abraham and then to David. And what Jerusalem did for God's people is it signified his presence among them. Here shall be the house of the Lord. It was the place where God would dwell. Now, while the exiles had been away in exile, they were remembering Jerusalem very fondly, not just as a cultic place, but as the place where God was. Psalm 137, the captors were saying to the captives, sing us one of the songs of Zion. And you remember what the psalmist says there? How can we sing the Lord's song in this foreign land? If I forget Jerusalem, let my right hand forget its strength. They were thinking of Jerusalem. They remembered it. Most people know the story of Daniel and the lion's den. Do you remember why Daniel was put in the lion's den? It's because those who hated him wanted to get rid of him. And the only way that they could get rid of him was by making a law where they were pretty sure that he would break that law and so have to be condemned to whatever destruction there might be. And so they went to the king and said, Let not anyone make any request of you, of anyone other than you, for the next 30 days. Now you see, if you carried that out to the full, you couldn't even say to your wife, please pass the salt. Because that's making a request of someone else, other than the king. But that's not what they were interested in. They were only interested in Daniel and trying to get rid of him because they knew he would make a request of the Lord. And what we read about Daniel is that in chapter 6 of that book, in verse 10, he knew about the edict, and he opened the window toward Jerusalem in order that he might call upon the name of the Lord. And the peeping Toms came around and found him doing that. That's why he was taken, because of his love for Jerusalem. His desire to acknowledge God as the one living and true God. Nehemiah was one who served the king in Persia. And the king saw him looking rather depressed one day. And even though he was the cupbearer to the king. And the king said, what's the matter? I don't usually see you depressed. What's wrong? He said, why should not my heart be down when I know what has happened to the house of the Lord in Jerusalem? Well, what is it you want? I want to go back there and rebuild it. It was that important to these men, Nehemiah and Daniel, and to the writer of Psalm 137, that they all continued to think about Jerusalem, because that's where God was. That's where he was dwelling. It was his dwelling place on earth. The temple was there. The tribes would gather there 3 times a year. And you can imagine, it's hard to imagine what all those celebrations were like. But you can begin to imagine it. You can think of our celebration here on the 4th of July and how in Ridgefield Park we have that big celebration here, or when we have the business fair, or the kinds of celebrations we have
at the end of the year. Yeah, we do have a lot of celebrations, don't we? Well, their celebrations were all centered in Jerusalem. It was a place of celebration and joy. And this period, when they were just coming back from the exile, was a transitional period, really, for Israel. They are never going to get back to the glory of the Mosaic covenant, because they've been taken away. The kingship is no longer going to be something that they have in Jerusalem. But they need to learn to live knowing that there is a king, and that, of course, is God in heaven. They were moving on toward the new covenant. They were looking ahead. They had to look ahead to the time when Christ would come. And they would begin to think of Jerusalem in a different way, because they had been told by the prophets that Jerusalem was going to be destroyed. So we are to come not to old Jerusalem, but to the new Jerusalem. You see, Jerusalem, Israel, is no longer our place of hope and joy. And it baffles me that many people, many who call themselves by the name of Christ, still think of it as the place that we are to have for hope and joy. Consider some of the things that are said about it. In response to Daniel's prayer in Daniel, the 9th chapter, God tells him that it's going to be destroyed. After the 62 weeks, an anointed one shall be cut off and shall have nothing, and the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. Its end will come with a flood, and to the end there shall be war. Desolations are decreed. The city and the sanctuary are being ended, he says. People weren't remembering that. And so when Jesus came, the disciples said to Jesus one day as he came out of the temple, "Isn't this place magnificent? Look at those marvelous stones that are there." And that, indeed, as you think about the size of the stones that were placed there, you wonder how they did it. But the place was not what it should be for them to continue in. Jesus talks about that in his Olivet Discourse then. He says to his disciples in chapter 21, Luke 21, beginning with verse 20, "But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation has come near. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountain. Let those who are inside the city depart, and let not those who are out in the country enter it. For these are days of vengeance, to fulfill all that is written." Looking back to the time of Daniel and other things. "Alas for the women who are pregnant and for those who are nursing infants in those days. For there will be great distress upon the earth and wrath against this people. They will fall by the edge of the sword and be led captive among all nations. And Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled." And that's what happened in 70 AD. Jerusalem was destroyed and defiled. And we shouldn't be seeking to return there. Jesus makes that clear in speaking with a woman in Samaria. This lady in Samaria figured out that Jesus was a prophet because of some of the things that he was saying to her. And so, just like a lot of people I hear today who say, "Well, when I get to heaven, I want to ask St. Paul this, or I want to ask Moses about that." She said, "Ah, here is my opportunity. I perceive that you're a prophet. Now, we Samaritans live, we worship here in this mountain of Samaria. But you Jews say you're supposed to worship down in that mountain where Jerusalem is. Now, you're a prophet. Which is it? A or B? And Jesus' answer was none of the above. In John chapter 4, he says, "You worship what you do not know, we worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here," notice, "when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such people to worship Him. God is spirit, and those who worship Him must worship in spirit and truth." It's neither Samaria, nor Jerusalem. But it is the heavenly Jerusalem, that Jerusalem that we read about in Revelation chapter 21. We should not be seeking to return to old Jerusalem for our worship. No, it's not wrong to go there to see where Jesus lived, to help to understand some of the things you find written in the New Testament in particular. But you have come to the heavenly Jerusalem. That's what the writer of Hebrews says. Hebrews chapter 12. And beginning with verse 18, he says, "You have not come to what may be touched, a blazing fire and darkness and gloom and tempest, and the sound of a trumpet and the voice of whose words made the hearers beg that no further messages be spoken to them. For they could not endure the order that was given. If even a beast touches the mountain, it shall be stoned. Indeed, so terrifying was the sight that Moses said, 'I tremble with fear.' But you have come to Mount Zion," another name for Jerusalem. "You have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to innumerable angels in festal gathering, and to the assembly of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, and to God the judge of all, and to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel." You have come to the new Jerusalem, where Jesus is reigning, where He is King. We are to seek this heavenly Jerusalem, not some utopia or nirvana, but we seek the heavenly Jerusalem. Because that's where God's glory shines. What we saw, what you could see in Jerusalem, whether it was after Solomon built the temple, or whether the temple was rebuilt from the exiles, or Herod's temple, that was only a replica of what is in heaven. And he says, that's what you've come to. You've come to the heavenly Jerusalem. So that for you to go back to worship at Jerusalem is to go there with your wife and have her standing at your side, and you hug and kiss and caress her picture. Is that what you would do? No, she's there. The reality is there. The reality is the heavenly sanctuary. And that's where we have come right now, to worship God, to magnify His name. This is where you are to meet with God. You renounce the old and you take the real. Do you meet with God where He is? Or do you try to meet with Him in rubble? No, you're to meet with Him where He is, in the heavenly Jerusalem. God with us. This is our hope. This is our desire. Yes, we can learn a lot of things by going to old Jerusalem, but it's done away. Just as God said to Daniel, And as Jesus proclaimed in his Olivet Discourse, and as he said to the woman at the well, it's done. There's a new place. There's the real place, the heavenly place. And in it is the blessing of the presence of God, in that heavenly place. Here we meet with Christ. So come. Come, let's go to the heavenly Jerusalem and meet him there with the rest of God's people. That's what the psalmist would call you to do.